What if I told you we basically just solved one of the oldest problems in human history? Like, we finally made world-class personalized tutors totally free and available to everyone on Earth 24 hours a day. And the result was that student learning just, well, flatlined.
Yeah, I mean, it completely defies centuries of logic, because if you trace the entire history of education, it is fundamentally a history of scarcity. It has always been this long, desperate fight against simply not having enough resources to go around, you know? Think about the very beginning. First, it was the actual texts that were scarce.
Right, before the printing press.
Exactly. When monks were literally hand-copying manuscripts, education essentially meant memorization. Getting the text into your head was the entire skill, because you couldn't just, you know, take the book home with you.
The book was literally chained to the desk. But then, okay, books get cheap, and suddenly, the new scarce resource is the person who can actually explain the book to you. The teacher.
Right. And because teachers were scarce, society had to engineer a solution to ration them. So we built classrooms, we created timetables, we batched 40 kids into a room at a time. The entire apparatus of school, as we know it, is fundamentally a batch distribution system, right? It's designed to stretch scarce instruction across as many young minds as possible.
Okay, let's unpack this, because this brings us to the present and to the massive paradox we are exploring in today's deep dive. Artificial intelligence has just driven the marginal cost of instruction to absolute zero.
Right down to zero.
Yeah. You can pull out your phone right now and access an infinitely patient, highly adaptable tutor. So by all historical logic, the bottleneck is gone. Learning should be exploding.
It should be. But the hard data tells a completely different story. Let's look at Khan Academy, who have been offering free, high-quality instruction for over a decade now. According to their own 2024 efficacy report, only about 9% of students actually hit the recommended usage on the platform.
Wait, 9%. So the vast majority just abandoned it completely.
Basically, yeah. And the numbers get even starker when you look at a massive randomized trial run by a University of Toronto team. So they tracked over 10,000 students using an educational platform. They found that dedicated younger kids in the third through sixth grades who used the platform for a full 35 minutes a week, well, they saw slight math gains.
Okay, so a little bump for the younger kids.
Right, but the seventh and eighth graders averaged just 10 minutes a week, and their learning gains were zero, literally nothing. You can give the ultimate educational tool away for free, and people still won't use it.
Wow, so the bottleneck didn't disappear with AI, it just migrated. The problem is no longer who will teach, but why would anyone want to learn?
Exactly.
And if you've ever felt your own eyes glaze over during a mandatory training or like a dry lecture, you know firsthand that having access to information is not the same thing as having the desire to consume it. So today we're diving into how we actually ignite that desire and why handing over all our thinking to a machine might actually be a catastrophic trap.
Right. And to understand why motivation is so universally low in the first place, we have to look closely at the machinery of the school system we're forcing students through.
The batch distribution system. It essentially functions like, well, like a 200-year-old Prussian factory. Grade levels, uniform pacing, midterms, finals. It was a perfectly reasonable way to organize things for an era when instruction was hard to come by. But today, it just feels like this giant machine designed specifically to grind down a student's natural curiosity.
Yeah, the system operates on a currency of external rewards and punishments, you know, grades, class rankings, college admissions. And the damage these external carrots and sticks do to intrinsic interest is, well, it's one of the most thoroughly replicated findings in all of motivation science.
Let's trace that back, actually. How do we know for sure that grades kill curiosity?
We can look back to a classic 1973 Stanford study. Researchers went into a preschool and identified children who already naturally loved drawing during their free play time.
Okay, so kids who already had the internal motivation.
Exactly. They took these kids and divided them into groups. They told one group of kids they would get a special certificate for drawing a picture. Then weeks later, the researchers observed the kids again during normal free play time.
And the certificate kids.
The certificate kids drew half as much as the kids who were never promised anything. A later meta-analysis of 128 different experiments confirmed this exact dynamic. Expected, tangible rewards systematically erode existing interest.
But why, though? Like, why does getting a reward make me want to do the activity less? What is actually happening in the brain?
It comes down to a psychological concept called self-perception theory. Humans don't have perfect direct access to our own subconscious motivations. We often act as observers of our own behavior to figure out what we want. So your brain looks at what you were doing and asks, well, why am I drawing this picture?
Oh, like a detective investigating my own actions. My brain says, I see myself drawing to get a certificate, therefore I must not actually care about the drawing itself.
Right, and when the certificate is no longer on the table, your reason for doing it just vanishes.
The motivation completely evaporates.
Exactly. Which creates a tragic irony in modern education. The traditional school system is actively burning our newly scarce resource, which is internal motivation, in order to solve a problem access to instruction that no longer exists.
That is wild. Mm. So if handing out certificates and grades destroys the engine of curiosity, how do we get a person to actually want to learn? Because especially in the tech world, there is this pervasive belief that you shouldn't try to force desire into people's heads. You should just find the demand that already exists.
Oh, right.
It reminds me of the story from our sources about the AI education organizer.
The organizer who tried hosting traditional lectures telling people they needed to learn AI, and literally nobody showed up.
Yeah, he couldn't get anyone in the door. But then he switched the format. He threw out the lecture entirely and hosted hackathons and VC demo days, and suddenly it was a packed house.
His big takeaway was that you can't force learning, you just have to find where the demand is hiding.
What's fascinating here is that he actually drew the wrong conclusion from his own success.
Wait, really?
Yeah. The assumption that interest is just an entry ticket you possess before you walk into a room is fundamentally flawed. Interest is a product of the learning environment itself.
Okay, I'm going to need some evidence on that. How do we know interest is created rather than just uncovered?
Well, look in a randomized controlled trial published in Science in 2009. Researchers took high school students and introduced a very simple intervention. They just had the students write a paragraph or two every week responding to one prompt. And the prompt was, how does what you learned this week relate to your life?
And what did the other kids do?
The control group simply summarized the weekly material.
So summarizing versus personal connection.
Right. And the students writing the personal connection saw massive spikes in both their interest levels and their actual grades. The crucial detail in the data, though, is that the gains were largest for the low motivation students, the ones who fully expected to do badly in the class.
Oh, wow. So if interest was just a hidden reserve you had to find, this intervention should only have helped the kids who already had that latent demand. Exactly. Instead, the environment created the demand from scratch. Interest begins as situational.
Okay, so that tech organizer didn't find demand by hosting a hackathon. He built a stage that lit unlit interest on fire.
Yes, he built an arena. And that arena runs on two incredibly powerful engines of ignition. The first is demand translation. That is the moment a student suddenly realizes, oh, this tool actually solves a problem I personally care about.
I completely buy the translation part. They see why the tool matters to them. But knowing something is useful doesn't automatically mean a teenager is going to spend their entire Saturday doing it. What's the second engine?
Imitation. This relies on René Girard's theory of mimetic desire. Girard argued that most of our desires aren't entirely our own. They are copied from other people. We want things because people we admire want them.
Like how nobody cared about a specific brand of insulated water cup until they saw everyone on TikTok holding one? The desire is completely contagious.
Precisely. What actually ignites someone at an AI demo day isn't a logical argument about the utility of code. A teenager sees a peer, someone who talks like them, dresses like them, stand on a stage, show off a web app, and suddenly get crowded by people asking questions. That social contagion is what lights the fire, not the syllabus.
Demand translation persuades, but imitations spreads like a virus. That is so different from how society usually tries to motivate kids. Usually the pitch from an adult is just, learn this math now because you'll need it for your career someday.
Which completely fails to account for how the human brain processes time. Humans discount future rewards hyperbolically.
Meaning, a dollar today is worth way more to my brain than a dollar next year. And every day you push that dollar back, its perceived value just falls off a cliff.
Right. And for a child under 13, that cliff is practically vertical. The brain's limbic system, which governs impulse and immediate gratification, matures incredibly early. But the prefrontal cortex, which is responsible for long-term planning and grasping abstract consequences, it doesn't finish maturing until well into adulthood.
So arguing with a 12-year-old about the long-term importance of their future career is like trying to pay a 10-year-old for mowing the lawn with a treasury bond that matures in 2036.
Exactly.
The mathematical value is factually correct, but to a developing brain, it is utterly useless in the present moment. You are arguing against an undefeated biological discount curve.
Right. We can't abandon long-term goals, but we have to change how we reach them, using a concept from reinforcement learning called reward shaping. When computer scientists train an AI, if a reward is too far away and too sparse, what they call a sparse distal reward, the agent just wanders aimlessly and fails.
So how do you fix it?
The fix is to lay a continuous trail of small, immediate rewards to pave the gradient toward that distant goal. You don't lower the standard, you change the geometry of the reward.
There's a perfect example of this in the sources with the father who was trying to teach his daughter to code. Instead of pitching her on, you know, learn AI programming because it's a valuable career skill, he swapped the reward geometry. He pitched her on, let's build a web game your friends can play today.
Yes. The code written today runs today. The button built this week gets clicked by friends this week. It is the exact same ultimate educational goal. She still has to learn variables, loops, and debugging, but the reward is immediate.
Okay, so we've mapped out the motivation. The kid actually wants to code the game. They are engaged. Now, they turn to their infinitely patient 24/7 AI tutor with a genuine question. Here's where it gets really interesting. Historically, a teacher would give them the answer. So if the AI gives them the answer instantly, that's a massive win, right? The learning is seamless.
Actually, that assumption is the most dangerous blind spot in this entire conversation. Let's examine a bombshell study published in PNAS in 2025. A team out of the University of Pennsylvania took nearly 1,000 students at a Turkish high school and split their math practice into three distinct groups.
Okay, what were the groups?
Group one used standard, vanilla ChatGPT. Group two used a guardrailed AI that was programmed to only give hints, never the final answers. And group three used no AI at all, just traditional pencil and paper.
Standard AI, guardrailed AI, and old school manual practice.
Got it. Right. So during the practice sessions, the vanilla ChatGPT group looked like absolute geniuses. Their practice scores jumped 48%. But then came the closed book exam, where they had to perform without any AI assistance.
Let me guess. The chat log showed they were just asking for the final answers during practice, so when the exam came, they had nothing.
It was worse than nothing. The vanilla AI group scored 17% worse than the kids who used no AI at all. They actively degraded their own knowledge.
Mind you.
Meanwhile, the guardrailed AI group, the ones who only received hints and had to do the final math themselves, saw their practice scores rise by 127%, and they perfectly matched the control group on the actual exams.
They did worse with the standard AI because they completely offloaded the thinking.
Exactly. It connects to a fundamental law of learning science called desirable difficulties. Spacing out your practice, self-testing, the actual physical sensation of struggling with a problem before seeing the solution, these are the cognitive operations that physically carve information into your long-term memory.
Meaning the smoother and more effortless the learning feels, the less of it actually sticks.
Yeah.
And AI is essentially humanity's ultimate difficulty remover.
When a student interacts with AI, they are walking a tightrope between two distinct loops. The hint loop protects motivation by keeping the student from getting so frustrated that they quit. But the answer loop completely bypasses the brain's processing center. If you outsource the cognitive labor of generating the answer to the machine, absolutely nothing accumulates in the student's head. The defining variable for success is whether the cognitive labor remains inside the human.
But wait, if the student absolutely must do the heavy cognitive lifting, what happens to the people who haven't yet developed the drive or the foundational knowledge to even know what questions to ask the AI? Like, there is a story in our sources from a guy who argued that forced classroom English was completely useless to him. He claimed he only mastered the language effortlessly later in life, purely through traveling and playing video games. Doesn't his story prove that if we just let people pursue what they actually need in the moment, the learning takes care of itself?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, he is entirely blind to the foundation holding up his own success. I mean, he had 9 years of compulsory classroom English drilled into him before that effortless video game ignition took place. Motivation can activate an existing capability, but it cannot build that foundation from zero.
Right. Concrete was already poured. He just needed a reason to drive on it.
Precisely. Relying purely on need-driven learning is what computer scientists call a greedy search. An algorithm doing a greedy search only climbs the slope it can immediately perceive in its local environment. If you have never been exposed to calculus, you cannot organically develop a need for calculus because it just doesn't exist on your map of reality.
It's like trying to crave a food you've never tasted. You don't even know it exists, so you can't go looking for it.
Which is why relying entirely on self-driven learning has massive, terrifying societal consequences. Consider a 2015 study in Science that analyzed 68 free online courses from Harvard and MIT.
Oh, the massive open online courses. The promise was that putting world-class lectures online for free would democratize education and level the playing field.
Right, but the enrollees overwhelmingly skewed much wealthier and more educated than the average American. Giving someone a free tool does not magically generate the ingrained drive or the background knowledge required to utilize it. Free AI is currently replaying this exact same script.
So just making it free isn't enough?
No. As AI makes the generation of content cheap and effortless, what actually becomes premium are taste and judgment. The ability to ask incredibly good questions and accurately interrogate an AI's output. And taste and judgment, well, they don't grow on demand. They require years of being pushed into contact with difficult material.
So pull is essentially the dividend of push. When society forces a broad curriculum onto a student, it is basically lending its long-term time horizon to a developing brain that is trapped by a steep immediate discount curve. We push them with forced exposure so that one day they have the capacity to pull for themselves.
Yes, we have to synthesize all of these forces. Our sources draw a profound, somewhat wild parallel between human education and AI alignment.
Let's break that down, actually, starting with where they overlap. So what does this all mean?
In AI development, if an agent figures out how to cheat a test to get a high score without actually learning the task, that is called specification gaming, or Goodhart's Law. It is overfitting to a proxy metric.
Like telling a cleaning robot to minimize the amount of dust on the floor, and the robot just unplugs its own dust sensor so it registers zero.
Exactly.
It achieved the metric, but completely bypassed the intent. That is exactly what a human student is doing when they just memorize the test answers to get an A. They have the reward function, but miss the education.
Right. But at the highest conceptual level, AI alignment and human education are polar opposites. In AI, the ultimate goal of alignment is to keep the agent stably fixed to an externally given objective. You desperately want to prevent drift. If an AI figures out how to rewrite its own reward function to value something other than what we programmed it to value, a failure mode called wireheading, that is considered an absolute catastrophe.
Right, I'm trying to wrap my head around this. So in AI, drifting away from the original goal is a disaster. You definitely do not want the robot deciding it prefers a different goal than the one you gave it. But in human education, if a student walks into college wanting to be an accountant because their parents told them to, and they take a biology class, fall in love with it, and completely rewrite their own life goals to become a researcher, we celebrate that.
We do. That is the literal definition of educational success. What counts as a disaster in AI alignment is what we call graduation in human education. True education is controlled value drift. If you rigidly align a person to an external objective without allowing them to drift and discover their own desires, you aren't educating them. You are domesticating them.
Domesticating them. Wow.
Yeah. Education requires building the arena, laying the trail of shaped rewards, aggressively guarding the cognitive labor so they don't outsource their thinking to a machine, and then slowly dismantling the scaffolding until the student is legislating for herself.
You are actively trying to trigger that controlled value drift. Thank you so much for breaking all this down. To you listening, I want to leave you with one final thought to chew on as you go about your day. As artificial intelligence becomes ubiquitous, as it gets terrifyingly good at seamlessly anticipating our desires and instantly answering our every need without us having to break a sweat, it threatens to eliminate the exact friction required to trigger our own growth. If we aren't fiercely careful to protect our own cognitive labor, could the ultimate cost of a frictionless AI world be a society of fully domesticated humans? A world where we never develop the friction-forged strength to rewrite our own desires. The real scarcity isn't information anymore. It's the willingness to struggle for it. Keep pushing into the friction of learning, everyone. We'll catch you on the next deep dive.